accession number 20473, reel 3.
Lendon, reel 3. You were going to tell me about flutter.
Yes. The reason I mention it is because now, particularly when you think about smoking and drinking, it was something which, if anything, was helped on by the services during the war, and drinking particularly. Now, flutter, all it had was a wet canteen. I don't even know whether you could buy a cup of tea there, but I got my doubts. It was beer. And in the Navy, you're forced to go ashore every now and again, whether you like it or not. They escort you ashore if you don't. So you can't stay on the ship all the time. So the only place to go ashore was flutter. And all it was a wet canteen, sheep, and a little wooden jetty. And the ships at that time made up there, mainly, there was quite a few, the big fleet ships, because of the... they were there, obviously, to keep their eyes on the Germans in case they've sent their fleet out or their ships out from Norway or whatever they were. So basically, it used to be quite an hectic place in this wet canteen, quite a big place. And that was the only thing you could. So you could only go ashore and drink beer, full stop. They did, if I remember right, have cinema on a Saturday afternoon, but most ships, like I was on, would be in three watches. So the best you could do on that would be to see a film show once every 3 weeks at the best. So basically, if you went ashore, which you were obliged to do to a certain extent, you drink beer. So that I learned to drink at the early age of 16. Admitted, we couldn't drink too much, we never had the money, but that's all it was about. And the matlows used to stagger off from the wet canteen onto this wooden jetty. On a night, they used to be picked up by MFV, water fishing vessels, that was run by local fishermen. They used to run them around the ships, Liberty men, Liberty boats, we called them. And it used to be quite an interesting on that jetty sometime, because they used to have to make several trips. You have battleships and that, and there was quite a lot of people involved. So they used to come around, pick up one let, and go around and, again, you see. And we were on it one night, and all I was there... it was two little lamps right at the end of the pier, and they only had crosses on them. They hardly see them, just so the boats could see them to come alongside. We were all on the jetty this particular night, and suddenly the boat hit the middle of the jetty and broke it in two. And we finished off in the water. All that was only a few feet deep. It was about 4 or 5 matlows drowned because they were drunk, you see. And it all turned out that what had happened was that... one leading seaman that was going back, oiled, going back to the ship, he talked the civvy into taking, let me take it alongside, you know, and he allowed him to do it, and he misplonked. But anyway, that was just a little incident that did happen there, and that would be what? Oh, middle of 41, probably, around about August, something like that time. We were there for a few months. We did one or two smally, went over towards Halifax, a convoy kind of thing, but basically that's where we were until we finished our trials. And when we left there, we had another funny thing that happened there. We had a chap aboard the ship called Norfolk, a Cockney, and he was a peculiar bloke, really, as this boy, but he was up masthead lookout, and we were doing torpedo trials. Now, we used to fire a torpedo, and it'd have a dummy head, a cork head. And what had happened, when it ran out of steam, it would just sink, and floats pop up and down with a cork head to keep it afloat. And it'd have, I'm trying to think what it is, the chemical on the top, which, when it's wet, when it's dry, it just flares there, I'm trying to think what it is. Anyway, that'll show you where it was.
You mean magnesium?
Phosphorus. Phosphorus, yeah. And you'd have this phosphorus head, you know, the part, so you could find it afterwards, you see, recover it. Well, what had happened was, he was masthead lookout, and he was told from the bridge, keep your eye on the ship, keep your eye on the torpedo when it's fired. Of course, he's got his glasses there, sitting up there, and just as it was going to be fired, somebody had a sound power telephone. Somebody ring the telephone, didn't they? So he turned around to answer it. torpedo went, he never seen it, and it just disappeared. The torpedo just disappeared. Of course, there was quite a fuss went on. Not just because the torpedo was worth a few thousand pounds, but also danger to shipping, with all that big ships there, with something floating around the harbour like. Anyway, he had a job in the whaler, being pulled around the rest of the day and part of the night trying to find this blasted torpedo. And he didn't find it. But the purely part of it was that I was on watch on the pom-poms, just keep night watches. You always kept watches, akak, no matter where you were, even in harbour. And suddenly I seen something popping up and down, smoke coming from. What the hell's that? I said, what, I wonder what that is. So I reported the bridge, strange object. Yeah, it was this torpedo. And what had happened, by all accounts, is just before that, I think it was a KG-5 had come in, churned up the mud, and of course the torpedo had obviously gone down and stuck in the mud and it had come up again. But that was a peculiar instance I remember that happened in Scapa. But we left there, I think it was in early September, 41, and went down to the Clyde and picked up a huge convoy, along with the Repulse and the Prince of Wales, Sheffield, oh, loads of ships. And nobody knew where we were going, except the whisper was we were going to Malta. Well, the convoy went down, right past Gibraltar, and then doubled back. But in the meantime, our ships had to refuel quite frequently. I don't think we had very big bunkers, I don't know the reason was, but we left the convoy when we got level with Gib, went into Gibraltar to oil. In the meantime, the convoy carried on, doubled back, and come through the straits on the night. But while we were in Gibraltar, and the oiler come alongside, they told us where we were going. They knew all about the convoy going to Malta, and this was presumably the first relieving convoy to Malta in September 1941. We had the Ark Royal with us. The Prince of Wales and Repulse left that convoy and went to the Far East, and you know what happened there. That's what they were on the way out there. That was part of the exercise alongside the convoy. We were put alongside the Ark Royal with another Dara class cruiser called the Amanis, and we were Akak guard ship for the Ark Royal. They attacked her incessantly through that first convoy, mainly Italian torpedo bombers, Savoia machetes, but of course German ship aircraft as well. We really got pasted on our way to Malta, and when we got there, we'd run out of ammunition. If you look, you notice that ship, it had three turrets forward and two aft. Most unusual. Most ships only have two forward. Now, we could fire on barrage 14 rounds a minute a gun. So, you work it out for yourself. When you're firing barrage, you're just using the same fuse set, and so all you've got to do is bung the shell in, fire it, and put the next one in, and so on. We were putting a barrage up of 140 rounds a minute. That's quite a lot, particularly that was the biggest Akak gun there was, a 5.25, 86-pound shell. So, we'd never really fired in anger before. Consequently, I think they misjudged, you know. When we got to Malta, we didn't have any ammunition left to fire it all, simple as that. Now, there wasn't any in Malta, because these were brand-new guns. There wasn't any in Malta at all. So we had to go back overnight, without any ammunition, flat out, to get back to Gib as soon as possible to get ammunition. The Ark Royal, by the way, she left. The Nelson was in that convoy too, and the Rodney, and the Nelson was torpedoed in that convoy, as a matter of fact. But the Ark Royal, on her way back, of course, she was sunk. You know, sorry about the Ark Royal, she was on her way back from that convoy when she got sunk, torpedoed. Now, as a boy on the ship, we had to do the same as everybody else when it comes to action stations and defence. We had to keep watches. We had to turn in at 9 o'clock at night, unless we had a watch. If we were on watch, well, we'd done the same as everybody else. We'd maybe have the first watch, we'd turn in at 12 o'clock. The Navy, by the way, always do four-hour watches. except for the dog watchers. And there's 2 hours, you know this, do you? Split in two deliberately to vary, otherwise you'd be doing the same watches every day. So the 2 evening watches from 4 till 6, 6 till 8, split into 2 watches. So that changes the routine, you don't do the same watches every day. But as a boy, as I say, I'd be 10, maybe 10 in at 12 o'clock if I was on watch. But if I wasn't on watch, I'd be 10 in by 9 o'clock. It'd be peculiar when you think about it. And when I first went on that ship, she had pom-pom directors. So this was a brand new thing. This was a gyroscopic sight. Come very well known later on in the war, but in them days it was brand new. And they never had them on the guns. They had we had 2 directors to direct the pom-poms. They say, you know what the pom-poms are, multiple pom-poms, 2-pounder guns. And one of the problems he had, because everybody who's new to this, was the gyro rate unit, called it a GRU, used to be a joystick inside like kind of a rubber. And when you unlocked the gyro, it used to spin. So when you put the sight on the aircraft, you had twin wires. The idea was to keep the twin wires on the nose of the aircraft, and it allowed for the aim off. You know, you always got to fire in front of an aircraft, obviously, but it allowed for all that. You see, this is what it was all about. But it was sort of touchy. You had to have, if you moved it a little bit quick, it used to black out because the gyro used to fall over. You've got a spinning top, if you like, and if you try to move it too quick, it just collapsed. So you just have to lock it, unlock it again, and then start all over. You just black out the screen, then on it to come on again, and so on. So I was chosen for a job as a gyro rate unit because, being a boy, I reckon I had a woman's touch, let's put it that way. I was only a young lad. So I was just underneath the bridge in this position. We had a layer, a trainer, like you'd have on a gun. I'd be gyro rate unit, and then there was a captain. He was the man who decided to, he used to be able to fire electrically, fire the pom-poms from that position, like your cannon director. But generally speaking, what he'd done is sent a message down to the guns, and they'd followed pointers. And in them days, they weren't power driven. You had to push them around by hand, these 4-barrel pom-poms, and then they used to keep the two, as long as they had the 2 pointers in line, in theory, you'd hit the aircraft. And that's what the only trouble was, it was so sensitive, this gear, that Q turret, that's the top turret, when it turned right round, we could nearly touch the barrels. Then one day it wasn't very early on actually, we had a premature fire. In other words, a lot of flame comes out before the shell. And coming to our position, it blew all the lot up. So they'd done away with them then, because they were too sensitive to be used in that position. They were used later on. Yanks used them more than what we did, actually, because they were expensive. Just put them on the guns, on the Oricons and that, so you could look at them. They weren't successful, I don't think so, because of the... certainly when the Yanks used them, because what the Yanks used to do, you know what, they were bomb happy in a way, and when they pressed the trigger, they kept it pressed all the time. Consequently, when you're firing any gun, particularly ACAT guns, the smoke, you can't see much of the smoke if you keep on firing all the time, and certainly the vibration, all it could probably do was get it on, press the trigger, then I wouldn't see anymore. So they were a bit of a waste of time, really. We use the eye shooting sights, what they call a 300-knot ring sight, so you had to allow the aim off yourself. In your mind, you had to decide how quick the aircraft was going, the angle, and allow for it, which was the air stop. Anyway, I was aboard there. We went from Gibraltar. Then we went to sea. We were supposed to be chasing a radar. I don't quite know. We never did meet it anyhow. But we were doing quite a few weeks down the South Atlantic, and then went into Simonstown to have extra portholes put in, because we were a ship that was built during the war. Consequently, they had very few portholes in, but seeing as we were going out to the tropics, they put extra portholes in. We were there for a couple of weeks or so in Salmonstown. Went up into Alexandria through the canal. When we got into Alexandria Harbour, we had quite a lot of ships there, actually. There was one, two, three battleships. No carriers, three battleships, quite a number of cruisers and destroyers. And that was in November. Yeah, beginning of November 41. By the time November had finished, we had no battleships, very few cruisers, about three or four cruisers left and a few destroyers. One battleship, the Barham, was sunk outside in November, or December, early December, back in November, I think. And the other two, they come in and blow them up, the Frogmen. You know about this, Queen Elizabeth and the Valiant. Now, that was interesting. We'd been out doing a sweep or something or other, and we come in, and the German U-boats had put a nest outside. There's a U-boat nest just outside Alexandria. They didn't need to go and chase us around. All they had to do was wait for us coming back to harbour, either Malta, mainly outside Alexandria. That's where we were based. So all they used to do was wait for us coming back or going out. Before we went out at any time, the escort vessels and she'd go ahead, and they used to have a battle royal with the submarines, get their edges down, so we'd go out, particularly if you had a convoy, with a convoy, you see. Coming back, of course, that didn't happen. You just had to go through whatever it was. Most of our ships were sunk going through that screen on the way back. But that particular night, it's the first cruiser we lost, was the Galatea. And we were steaming in line ahead, coming back. Well, I think we'd been out for a sweep or a bombardment, and she got torpedoed. And we got in about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning when we reached Alexandria. Now, there was a bit of an argument there about opening the boom at night. Anyway, because of the Galatea, I don't know. They opened the boom and we went in. And the first thing you do when you get in on board a ship is ammunition ship. First thing you do is ammunition and oil, so you're ready for anything happens. So we were ammunition and ship. And although we used to have air raids in Alexandria, but we did use lights there, but nevertheless, it used to be switched off when there was an air raid. We didn't have air raids continuous, but we had a fair amount. Anyway, we had ammunition in ship, and I was on the upper deck, and it'd be about 6 o'clock morning, just got light, I suppose, and it's about finished ammunition, and a bit, maybe a bit later than that, that people who weren't doing the ammunition, and they'd woke up early to get the breakfast and that. And I left the upper deck, and when I come down on the boys' mess deck, they were all having a breakfast. Mine was in the, used to have little ovens on them. Mine was in the oven, you see. I can even tell you what it was, because what happened was, I opened the oven door, and it was a tray, and in the tray you had what we used to call train smash. It was tomatoes, tinned tomatoes and sausages. You used to call it train smash. Quite a good name for it, really. I just put it out, and suddenly all hell let loose. There's explosions and God knows what. And all the tomatoes come all over me. Good job I was in my overalls. And anyway, panic stations. Got up top, couldn't see anything for smoke. They stuck bombs on the bottom of the QE and the thing. But they hadn't exploded at that time. They also put bombs on the oilers. The oilers had gone up first. But the smoke, we couldn't see what was happening. We were all sitting up there at action stations and getting reports through as they come along. And there's lots of things have been said about that particular operation, and I'm not too sure exactly what the routine was. Although, basically, we were up there until the reporter had picked up a couple of frogmen on the buoy of the Valiant. And they're questioning. And I think they thought that these bombs were laid on the bottom of the harbour, actually laid on the bottom, because it wasn't very deep in Alexandria. And but I understood that they were put on the bottoms of the ships, and the idea was they didn't want to sink the battleships in harbour. They wanted to get them out of the harbour, but the idea was to blow up the oilers who set fire to the harbour, so the battleships would have to go out. And they were on a time set, and then they blow up outside. Now, that was what we were told at the time. I have heard various things about this. But what happened was that they decided to... These two Italians, They were questioning them. They wouldn't say anything until I decided to send them down below. Then they told them what was happening. They didn't want to go down below, did they? Because there was a bomb on the bottom of the Valiant. So they decided the bombs were on the bottom of the... laid on the bottom of the sea. They were laid on the ground. So they said if they swung them around, the battleships were at buoys. If they swung them around, they'd get them clear, of course. I'm not sure, I did hear that there were the vibrations put a time set on, I'm not sure, but anyway, they swung the battleships around and they blew up anyway because they were on the bottom of the ships. The Valiant, see, you could have put a double decker bus on the side of her, the all other side of her. I think most of the stokers were killed on there too. But the QE sank almost straight and she was, her upper deck was still visible. And we denied this had happened. We even took pictures of the Marine Band playing on the QE. She was laid on the bottom, in actual fact. But that got rid of the battleships, because the Barham had been sunk a day or two beforehand. I think she was, what we were doing, I think we were bombarding Hellfire Pass, something like that, the cruisers. And the battleship went out as a screen, because they understand the Italian Navy was coming out, you see. And that's when she got torpedoed, the Barham. And as I say, the QE and Valiant never went out anymore because they were put on the bottom anyway. So bang went the Eastern Mediterranean fleet, more or less. It left us with about four light cruisers and a few destroyers. Now, part of our job out there, is, as you probably guess, we had to keep Malta supplied. Also, we had to keep Tobruk supplied. Bombard behind the 8th Army, or in front of the 8th Army, I should say. And all sorts of jobs like that. I can imagine we didn't have much of a fleet to do it with. We used to do Malta convoys, one a month. But we only used fast ships. Didn't have many ships, because we weren't big enough to escort them all. But basically, they had to be ships that could do around about 20 knots, I suppose, 15 to 20 knots. Simply because as soon as we left harbour, and sometimes even when we were in harbour, we got attacked by air. And that used to carry on all during daylight, even occasionally at night. We used to drop flares on the night and drop mines in front of us and what have you. So it was about 5 days to go from Alexandria with a fast convoy, and we'd come back quicker, the ships, unless we had empties. We very rarely did have empties. Most of them were sunk anyway, either if they got into Malta, very often they were put on the bottom there. But basically speaking, it was about 5 days. And that time, we used to close up at action station for 5 days, night and day. It used to be quite rough. But we used to do about one a month of them, and a few bombardments in between, and little things you had to do. We never got involved with what they called a Tobruk ferry. We were a bit too big for that. There was destroyers that did that, but nevertheless, they were at it all the time. So people back home didn't know what was going on out there, otherwise I think they would have been very unhappy about things in general. But every time we got another cruiser to back us up, we lost one. So we've continuously, we never had more than four at any time cruisers, usually only three, and they were light cruisers. And of course, you know, we met the Italian fleet twice.
What do you remember about that?
Well, we met the Italian fleet. First time we met the Italian fleet, she had a battleship and heavy cruisers and one thing and another. And we were not too far from Malta at the time. And what we did, we sent the convoy into Malta. We left the Coventry, I think it was, an Akak cruiser with them. She only had 4.5 Akak guns, the Coventry. And we tackled the Italian fleet to draw them away from the convoy. And we were lucky, because it was nearly dark when they met us late in the afternoon. So we didn't have to put up with a great deal before it got dark. And then, as soon as it got dark, we knew the convoy was reasonably safe then. So all we'd done then, we went back to Alexander, well, a chased us, if you like, but not really. They weren't very clever at night, the Italians. They didn't like action all night. That was the first time. Of course, the second time was a different ball game. We met them about dinner time, 12 o'clock. And we had to give battle 8 hours, actually. The Battle of Cirti. We had four light cruisers. New destroyers. We managed to get the convoy out the way. The convoy, by the way, was being hammered like hell by aircraft, Stukas and what have you. Oh, so were we, but mainly the convoy they were after. And the Italian fleet took us on. And they ran away at the end. Don't ask me why, but they ran away. It was an interesting battle. I don't think many people did see fleet battles during the war when you think about it. There wasn't any to speak of, except for the Tirpitz and that. It was a different ballgame. But these were two fleets meeting each other, such as they were. And very interesting because the tactics come in. I think some of the Nelson's tactics come in, really. But we ran in and out of a smokescreen most of the time. We used the smokescreen very effectively. The Italians hadn't got that idea at all. But we were running in and out of the smokescreen and fired at them, and of course they were firing back. The first salvo, by the way, went through the bridge of the Cleopatra. We didn't get a direct hit. Their 15-inch shells were bursting on the water. Of course, I knew they were only up against what we used to call tin cans. They were very, like, very thin steel, our ships. So they didn't need armour-piercing shells, not really. Any British shrapnel would go through the bulkheads. And we had a piece of shell about, well, this big. Went through about 8 bulkheads. That was only a piece of a 15-inch shell. We lost a lot of rigging with the shell going through around masthead high. Bat ensign was shot down pretty quick. Basically speaking, we had no casualties aboard or my ship at all. Well, there was on the Cleopatra, and some of the other ships got hammered. But it was quite successful, considering, because we had a lot of hits on the cruisers and the battleship. And that's the turnaround and went at the end.
What did it feel like in your action station?
Fantastic. Fantastic. It was very exciting. Very exciting indeed. And, of course, I only had an ACAT gun. So, I mean, I wasn't involved with the actual firing of the bigger guns, because I was only had an Oerlikon. But I was right underneath the bridge. I could see it all, you know. And what probably helped to turn the tide, a gale sprang up. Maybe through the afternoon, a gale sprang up. So I don't think the Italians like much bad weather anyway, so that might have helped the fact that they ran away, I don't know. But it was really comical, because we'd had all our rigging shot down, and we had a man up the masthead. Well, he was up the masthead, and he couldn't come down while we were action because of the radar. Yes, you just had to shut the radar off to let the masthead lookout come down. It was only a boy, actually, who was up there. And consequently, he was up there, by the way, for well over 24 hours at the end, because what happened was, all our rigging got shot away, and we couldn't get up to the masthead. First, when you leave the upper deck of a ship, you go up a wire ladder, and for the first yard, all that has been shot away, you see. So consequently, we couldn't get up there. The only thing that was left up was one signal halyard, and I think they wrote the ice flags on, and we had one of the signalmen climbed up that. And I took a bit of doing climbing up. It's like a clothesline, climbing up a clothesline to the bottom yard with another rope with him, and hoisted up, and we pulled this, fixed up a pulley, and we hoisted this bloke down because he'd passed out exposure. He'd been up there night and day, and it gets pretty cold in the med on the night, you know, surprising, particularly to see. And he'd collapsed, and they hoisted him out and lowered him down to the day. He was all right after a while, but that's just one of these little things that happened.
Were there any other casualties in the ship?
Not on board the ship, no. We only lost one man all the time we were out there, and that was a man who was killed from our own fire, from one of the other ships. Fired a cannon right across our upper deck, and he was a torpedo man, actually, and he got hit in the stomach with a cannon shell. We were very lucky. We were probably the luckiest ship in the Navy, I suppose, really, because we were never out of action at sea, and it went all the time in the Mediterranean, basically. And, we went all the way through and done the Salerno landings. Went through originally when the Second Front started out there. And we were based in Bourne with a Dido doing ACAC ship. Now, Bourne was the most advanced position on the Tunisian coast from the Gibraltar end, you know what I mean? That's as far as that was the most advanced place. We used to get bombed incessantly there. The Germans were then retreating into Tunisia at that time. Now, we got them sorted out there and cleared that. And we were there. We'd lost all our squadron. And there was only two ships left of the old squadron. And that was the Cleopatra and the Uralis. The others had been sunk. And we were operating from Malta. And